evening. You're listening to the Perpetual Notion Machine. Tonight, we take a look at the recent closure of several beaches in the surrounding Madison area due to toxic algal blooms present in the water. These blooms are coming back just after the major outbreak last month, which our guest says was one of the worst Madison has ever seen. We speak to the director of the UW-Madison Center for Limnology, Stephen Carpenter, to gain some insight on just what blue-green algae is and what these blooms mean for Madison's lake system. Welcome, and thanks for joining us tonight, Steve. Are you ready to begin, or do you have any questions
for me? I'm all set.
Okay. So before we begin, I would just like to set the stage, and maybe if we could get your definition of what blue-green algae is.
Blue-green algae or cyanobacteria are a very distinctive group of bacteria that are capable of photosynthesis, the same kind of growth as land plants, and they are among the most ancient organisms on Earth. They created the oxygen in our atmosphere 3.5 billion years ago, and they're still going strong.
Great. Thanks for that context. And maybe also what an algae bloom is, too?
By a bloom, we mean a concentration of some type of algae that reaches public nuisance levels. And there are various quantitative definitions that that have been used, and I'm not sure how many of those would have meaning for your readers. I would say that if you can't see more than a foot or two into the water, you're dealing with an algae bloom. I can also give you a bunch of quantitative definitions based on chemistry.
Okay, yeah, so for the bloom. So basically, I was just using that as a setup to ask, what exactly is happening with these algae blooms that are occurring in Lake Minota, Lake Mendota, and all the other lakes around in the Madison area?
Well, our lakes are very rich in phosphorus because the land around our lakes is very rich in phosphorus. The ultimate source of the phosphorus is agriculture. A lot of the urban phosphorus in the soil is legacy phosphorus from agriculture. Some of it was added in the form of lawn fertilizer back in the days when phosphorus lawn fertilizer was still legal. It's no longer legal to fertilize your lawn with phosphorus in the county. And there's just a great deal of phosphorus around, and every time it rains, we get some of it washing into the lake. It has been an exceptionally wet spring this year, so we have very wet soils. In some cases, the soils were wetted to capacity, to water holding capacity, for a good part of the spring. In some other areas, we have pretty high water tables due to the wet conditions. So when we get one of these huge rainstorms, like we tend to have in June through early September, that water's got no place to go, and it's going to run off, and it's going to run off fast, and it's going to carry a lot of phosphorus with it into the lake. So the really bad bloom we had around Father's Day,
right,
followed a very large rainstorm that occurred earlier that week, and then we had really hot conditions, and cyanobacteria really like it hot. And so it was sort of a perfect storm for cyanobacteria, with a lot of phosphorus runoff followed by hot conditions. So they grew up to very high levels, and eventually we then had calm conditions. And when the wind is calm, then they float to the top, and that's when the public really notices the bad effects.
And what are some of those bad effects that you've been talking about?
Well, they're toxic, for one thing, and I heard after the bloom that some of the toxin levels that were recorded were on the order of 20 times greater than typical health standards.
20 times greater?
20 times greater. That's in the lake water.
Wow.
And these, you know, at low levels, these toxins would just make you sick to your stomach. You'd think maybe you had food poisoning or something, but at really high levels, they can be fatal.
Fatal, and like as in human beings could die from this?
As in dead, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and there has been at least one death in Madison that's known to have been cyanobacterial poisoning, and I suspect there may be more because people don't usually know to test for it. And I also suspect there are a lot of cases of summer food poisoning, you know, where somebody thinks they got some bad potato salad or something, but maybe they actually ingested some cyanobacteria.
Right. How common of an occurrence is this? You said that cyanobacteria like it hot. We kind of have interesting conditions that allow for this to happen with all the phosphorus around the lake, as you said earlier. Is this a common occurrence that we can expect every summer, or is this something special that we've recently been seeing?
We have cyanobacterial blooms in our lakes almost every summer. The drought years are the exception. You know, the pretty big droughts like 2008 was the last. I'm sorry, 1988.
Quite a difference.
Yeah, there's a big difference. 2008 was a really wet year. 1988 was the last really big drought, and there were very few cyanobacteria that year. Your listeners may remember 2012, which is much more recent, only 5 years ago, and that was a short drought, but a very intense drought. That was that really hot summer, period of 2 or 2.5 months with very little precipitation, and we had fairly low cyanobacteria that summer as well.
So with the trend of climate change increasing the temperature and us being in a perhaps more urban-centered area, what do you think the effects on cyanobacteria, the effects of climate change will have on cyanobacteria? Do you have any sort of predictions?
Well, if you were an investor and cyanobacteria were releasing an independent public offering of stock today, you would buy a lot of stock in cyanobacteria. The market for cyanobacteria is very bullish. They're going to be doing really, really well. And that's unfortunate for us. The climate change drives cyanobacterial blooms in essentially three ways, and every way that it drives cyanobacteria blooms depends on the really high phosphorus that we have in our watershed. So the first way is precipitation is going to go up, and we're already seeing a gradual increase in annual precipitation. And that just means the soil is wetter, and there's, you know, conditions are better for runoff. Secondly, we're seeing more extreme storms. For example, of the 11 record storms since 1901, seven of them have occurred since 1991. So that's about a, you know, 116-year period, and the last 25 years of that period have seen seven of the 11 biggest storms. So
that's more than half.
And there are a bunch of other statistical studies that show that we're seeing bigger storms, and as I mentioned a few minutes ago, it's those big storms that really drive the phosphorus. And then the third factor in this triple whammy is that climate warming, guess what, makes it warmer.
Mm-hmm.
And so you end up with warmer water, and cyanobacteria do really well in warmer water. So those three things, more precipitation, concentrating that precipitation in big storms, which means big runoff events, and warmer water, those three factors are creating excellent conditions for cyanobacteria. Unfortunately, not good conditions for us.
Right. And there's not exactly much we can do about it. We can't control the amount of water that comes out at any given year. We can't control whether or not it comes at a big storm or what the temperature is going to be at any given time. But one thing we can control, you had mentioned that cyanobacteria really love phosphorus. What is there any sort of way we might be able to reduce any of these to prevent this? Or
sure. Yes, there is. I mean, of course, there is an ultimate way of dealing with climate change, and that's through treaties like the Paris Treaty and through forward-looking action to decarbonize our economy.
I went there. I didn't know if you would.
We just saw a report last week, one of the most comprehensive analyses of the costs of climate change. And for the United States, each degree centigrade of global warming costs us 0.7% of our GDP. So there are a lot of good reasons to address climate change, and one of them is that it will help with our eutrophication problem. While we are waiting for the world to do something about climate change, we can begin to think about phosphorus, because if we had lower levels of phosphorus in our soils, and if we did not dump manure on our soils, we would not have this enabling condition for high phosphorus load. So if the soils had lower phosphorus, and if we didn't have so much manure disposal in the fields, then it could rain and it wouldn't matter so much. It wouldn't wash so much phosphorus into the lakes. So it's definitely true that if we could reduce phosphorus in soils and control, or actually reduce or eliminate, preferably eliminate, disposal of manure on soils, we would have a much better shot at maintaining water that's drinkable and swimmable and fishable in the Madison Lakes.
Okay. And at our current rate, where are we at maintaining the health and safety of it? What sort of long and short-term effects are these algae blooms having on the lakes and the surrounding watersheds of the Madison area?
Well, any given bloom is probably a short-term effect.
Right.
The blooms themselves last maybe a couple of weeks. They can have really harmful effects. They could make a bunch of people sick. There would be recreational and economic losses associated with closing beaches and so forth. And there could be the impact of fish kills. That Father's Day bloom that we had this year killed massive numbers of fish. But at a larger scale, those things more or less pass by. But the there is a sort of an insidious damage of to people's attitude toward the lakes and toward people's viewpoint toward Madison.
What do you mean?
Having this sort of thing go on year after year. People are going to start swimming in swimming pools or doing their recreation somewhere else. And, one thing for people who live in Madison to think about is that where would we be without the lakes? Mm-hmm. You know, without the lakes, we're just Omaha. And the lakes are a really important part of quality of life here, and at some point, I think we're going to say enough. We need to fix this problem.
I see. Yeah, no, I didn't understand that, but no, it does have sort of like a negative stigma. Why would you want to swim in the water that could potentially kill you?
Exactly. You'd find another hobby.
Certainly so. Is this an issue that occurs a lot in other areas, other states around the nation? Is it, this isn't just a Wisconsin problem, is it?
It's a pretty widespread problem in the United States. You know, Wisconsin has a lot of dairy, and we also, in some parts of Wisconsin, we have a soil chemistry that is rather favorable to poor water quality, and the Madison area is one of those areas. But I think it's fair to say that every industrialized farming region in the world has problems that are similar to ours. You know, the details vary, but the general pattern of toxic cyanobacterial blooms is widespread in the world's industrial agriculture regions, and society has so far not been really effective at dealing with the problem.
So what sorts of issues do these pose exactly? I know that means you can't swim in the lakes. Is there anything beyond that? I mean, obviously, it can kill you, but is there any potential it could get into our drinking water and it can cause a lot more harm?
Well, it depends where a municipality gets its drinking water. Madison gets its drinking water from deep wells.
Deep wells, yeah.
And it would take the lake water a long, long time to contaminate those wells. So for Madison, drinking water is not such a big deal. For other cities that do get their drinking water from lakes, it can be a problem. And there are a number of municipalities in Wisconsin where it is a problem. Perhaps the most famous case nationwide was Toledo, Ohio.
Toledo, Ohio. What happened there?
Where the water supply, well, there were big algae blooms a couple of years ago, 2013, 14. I'm not sure, but if you Google Toledo cyanobacteria, you'll get a lot of hits, and it shut down the water supply for several hundred thousand people, and people were, you know, on very short notice, like bam, all of a sudden the water is undrinkable, and all of these people have to be going to get bottled water, you know, to drink, and it was a huge crisis for a while.
I'm looking at it right now. It looks like it happened in the summer 2014. Those
okay, that pictures, sounds about right.
They aren't nice. It looks like there's really murky green.
That's probably the most famous case because it happened suddenly. It was very toxic. It shut down the water utility, and no one was prepared. It just caught everybody flat-footed.
I see. Is this a sort of pre-warning for Madison? Could that something of that scale happen?
Well, we don't drink the lakes.
We don't drink the lakes, yes, but could our water potentially end up looking like how it looked like in Toledo, Ohio?
Well, our water is worse than Toledo, Ohio's right now,
wow.
and so we're there. The only difference is we don't drink it.
And I guess we wouldn't want to drink it now.
I sure wouldn't.
Exactly. What is your hope for the lakes? Do you think that we might invest some effort into cleaning
this
up? Well,
you know, there is effort being invested, and the county, Dane County, is you know, has really made heroic efforts to you know, to improve the lakes with the available technology and the available legal tools, and and I think it would be much, much worse if those efforts had not been made, because since the county and its partners have been driving these programs forward, the first one was in the early 1980s, the drivers have gotten worse. So there's been no decline in soil phosphorus. Manure application is about the same. And these climate changes that I mentioned have gotten worse. And so you know, we're really kind of swimming upstream here, and I think that if these efforts had not been made, we would be dealing with a much worse situation than we have now. Are we doing enough? Clearly not. This summer is one of the worst summers for water quality in the past few years because of these massive runoff events and the warm water.
Yeah, and it sounds like it's just going to get worse.
Now would be a good time for people to reflect on what kind of city they want to live in and what kind of water quality they want to deal with during the warm months. I think what makes me the most hopeful is looking back to seeing what we did with sewage treatment. And within my lifetime, Madison and the surrounding municipalities were dumping raw human sewage into the lakes. I think that's a pretty shocking statement.
That is pretty shocking.
But we were. And somehow, starting in the 1950s, it began to dawn on everyone that dumping human excrement in the lakes is not a great idea. And eventually this led to the formation of Madison Metropolitan Sewerage District, and lots of municipalities got plumbed into sewage treatment, and a huge effort was made to keep human waste out of the lake, simply because people realized that a decent society would not do that. And I think what we need, and what will eventually happen, is there will be a similar revolution with respect to soil phosphorus and manure. And we'll reach a point where people are just fed up. They say, it's enough. We've had enough of this. We're not doing this anymore. And at that time, there'll be a big effort on technology to try to figure out how to deal technologically with the manure problem and how to deal technologically with the soil phosphorus problem. And it might take a couple of decades to have a massive reform effort. If my memory is correct, it took 15 or 16 years to solve the human waste problem.
Interesting.
So these things, it's not like a light bulb goes off and then the problem's solved the next day. So it could take a decade or two. But the first thing that has to happen is people have to get fed up, and they have to say to themselves, a decent civilization would not live like this, and we're not going to live like this. And I don't think Madison is to that point yet, but I remain optimistic that it may happen.
Well, thank you. That's the Steve Carpenter perspective. Do you have anything left to say for me? Is there anything that maybe you'd like to mention?
No, I think I've rambled on about enough.
Actually, I do have one last question for you.
Sure.
What do you wish that people would know more about in regards to algae blooms or lake pollution or anything involved with blue-green algae?
I think there's plenty of accurate information in the newspaper every year. And, for example, there was just a really nice article in the State Journal by Steve Verberg about a week ago. So I think people can get that information. I think what people don't realize is how absolutely cool and unique the lakes are, and that they have, more than three dozen species of fish, not just the common ones but a lot of rare and really interesting fish. There are prehistoric fish like sturgeon and gar in the lakes. A lot of people don't know that. And I think because the lakes look so smelly and sort of dangerous at this time of year, that people are not learning as much about them as they ought to, and I can understand that. But I think one thing that would be really important for people to do is take some time to learn about all of the really interesting biology that goes on in the lakes. And one easy way to do that is to read our blog at limnology.wisc.edu/blog. Mm-hmm. And there are three posts a week, and quite a few of them, at least one a week, sometimes two a week, are just about cool biology in our lakes. And you don't have to put on a mask, you don't have to go swimming, you don't have to drink cyanobacteria. Just read it on the website. And I think if more people appreciated what a unique resource to the community the lakes are, they would take better care of the lakes.
Thank you very much for your time today and speaking with us, Professor Carpenter.
You bet. I'm happy to have talked with you, Kai. Thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you again. And that's another edition of Perpetual Notion Machine. A big thanks to the PNM team, and thank you to all of our listeners who make this show possible. Join us next week, same time, same frequency, to learn more about in-depth science and technology topics.